a sperm is wasted, God gets quite irate.
Every sperm is sacred, every sperm is great. If the sperm is wasted, God gets quite irate. Let the heathen spill their...
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Sharon Levin, who is the Director of Federal Reproductive Health Policy at the National Women's Law Center. Previously, she was Vice President and General Counsel at the National Abortion Federation, a consultant to NARAL, Pro-Choice America, and Director of Advocacy at the Washington Area's Women's Foundation. Ms. Levin was also the co-chief counsel to Senator Charles Grass Schumer and Special Assistant for Women's Issues and Legislative Counsel to Congresswoman Nita Lowry. Welcome to Background Briefing, Sharon Levin.
Thank you so much for having me, Ian. And I loved the piece about the Monty Python song you played at the intro. Sometimes I feel like I'm living in that skit.
Well, I wish people had a sense of humor about it, but unfortunately, they're quite passionate. And in fact, the passions are such that it's led to violence and the murder of abortion providers in this country, which I don't think happens anywhere else on the planet. Now that we're on that subject as opposed to Plan B, there appears to be a renewed war on abortion rights in the country at the state level. You've got North Dakota trying to ban all abortions, Arkansas banning them after 12 weeks, Mississippi has only one abortion clinic left, and now Kansas is getting into the act saying that life starts at fertilization. And, of course, in the Senate, you've got Senator Rand Paul, who a lot of liberals think is on their side. He's the sponsor of the Fetal Personhood Act, I think, isn't it called?
Yes.
So give us a sense of what's happening at the state level first before we talk about the federal level.
Sure. Although I do want to start with an overview, if that's okay with you, because I think we tend to parcel out the discussion abortion and birth control separately. And it really is an effort we've seen nationally over the past few years about people feeling like they can make women's decisions about reproductive health care, whatever it is, for them. And I think most women know that politicians, their bosses, other people shouldn't be making these very personal decisions. Women should be able to make these decisions for themselves. And the fight is broader than just abortion, but let's start with abortion. Previous to this year, we had seen a huge increase in the number of bills enacted about reproductive health generally in the states and about abortion specifically. So in 2011, 135 provisions restricting reproductive health had been passed in 36 states, and 68% of those were restrictions on abortion. And in 2012, we saw 122 provisions enacted restricting reproductive health, and of those, 43 were restrictions on abortion. Most people who prognosticate the future of legislation don't think we'll see quite as many bills this year, but they're going to be far more extreme. And as you mentioned, in Arkansas, we've seen a 20-week bill pass that would ban abortion at 20 weeks, which is a law that the legislature there voted to override the governor's veto on, and it's a law that has been struck down in court at least three times before. After that, they went ahead and passed over a gubernatorial veto a 12-week ban on abortion. These bills are clearly designed to go to the Supreme Court to try and challenge and overturn Roe v. Wade. North Dakota, as you mentioned, has also been looking at some extraordinarily extreme legislation. They passed a ban on abortion as early as 6 weeks, and the governor there specifically said it was about trying to figure out where states can ban abortion in the boundaries of Roe. So they're trying to overturn the decision and really take women back to a pre-Roe era, which is a very scary thought.
So when does it get to the Supreme Court in terms of being revisited or struck down? I mean, is this – obviously the purpose of doing all this is to overturn Roe v. Wade and to continually chip away at it. That appears to be the strategy. But is there a possibility that the federal courts or the Supreme Court will get tough and lay down the law?
I would hope so. It depends on the posture of the case that comes before us. And one of the things we've always feared is that the court will continue chipping away at the right to choose without ever saying the magic words, "We're overturning Roe." And the reason that's a scary thought is because I don't think people understand, if they're not lawyers, how much this right has already been curtailed in the states. And unfortunately, the news tends to cover sound bites, and without the sound bite, we're overturning Roe. People may not appreciate just how bad it's gotten.
So in other words, at the state level, things have been rolled back considerably, and it's gone under the radar because people have this false belief that Roe v. Wade somehow operates nationally, which I suppose it does in terms of federal law, but that has not prevented this serious erosion of reproductive rights that has gone on at the state level.
Thank you for putting into very articulate terms what I was trying to say. Exactly.
So what is then, because, you know, at the time of this last Supreme Court hearing, there was talk about Prop 8 and DOMA. Mm-hmm. There was an article by Adam Liptak in the New York Times, and I had some Supreme Court watchers on talking about it. And the theory was that because Justice Ginsburg has said that she thought that the abortion, she's had some criticism of Roe v. Wade, thought maybe it went too far too fast. There was a concern Supreme Court striking or allowing gay marriage, etc., would go too fast too far. And everybody I talked to said that was somewhat ridiculous. But nevertheless, the idea is out there. So are we to believe that even the staunchest person on the Supreme Court, Justice Ginsburg, has some problems with Roe v. Wade?
I think I agree with your guest that said this is all a bit ridiculous. I think the argument that when it comes to people's fundamental constitutional rights, the court should slow down and wait for the states to catch up is an argument made by people who fundamentally oppose those rights. So in the gay marriage context, I believe it's 9 states now who have allowed marriage equality. That means that there are 41 states, and D.C. has allowed it. There are 41 states that have yet to do so. And the idea that somebody should have to wait until all 41 states catch up in order to be able to get married is wrong. Real people get true harm when the court waits to assert a fundamental right. So there are a lot of women, for example, who would not have been able to make the decision for themselves as to whether or not to go forward with the pregnancy and would have suffered the true harm of that if the Supreme Court hadn't decided Roe in 1973.
Well, as if we don't have the historical precedent of Jim Crow. Talk about
exactly.
Waiting. I mean, waiting for what? For decades and decades for rights that were already given, then taken away or not enforced. So,
right. I always think of Karamatsu when people talk about that, which is the case for people who don't know about Japanese Americans who were living in the U.S. during World War II were interred in camps. And the Supreme Court, in a case called Karamatsu, said it was okay to do that. And years later, the Supreme Court had to rescind the decision, because it was obviously internment based solely on race and not for any reason believing that somebody simply because they were a Japanese American might be helping the Japanese in the war. And while it's lovely that the Supreme Court rescinded the decision, it doesn't help the people who were interred.
Again, I'm speaking with Sharon Levin, who is the Director of Federal Reproductive Health Policy at the National Women's Law Center. Previously, she was Vice President and General Counsel at the National Abortion Federation, a consultant for NARAL, Pro-Choice America and Director of Advocacy at the Washington Area Women's Foundation. Sharon Levin was also co-chief counsel to Senator Charles Schumer and Special Assistant for Women's Issues and Legislative Counsel to Congresswoman Nita Lowry. Let's turn to Plan B and the judge on Friday. In the New York federal court, U.S. District Judge Edward Corman, in a blistering opinion, struck down restrictions to those who can buy Plan B over the counter. And he really went after Kathleen Sebelius, and I guess by extension, President Obama. Is this now the law of the land that women can have unfettered access to Plan B over the counter?
The judge's opinion said that it had to be available in 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends, I guess, on whether or not there's an appeal by the government. I certainly hope there will not be. And that in this case, science triumphs. The science was very clear in this case that women of any age can use Plan B, which is, as you mentioned, a form of contraception. It's contraception you take after you've had unprotected sex. That women can use it effectively, and it's medically sound for them. And that it has to be the thing that determines when Americans get access to drugs, not people's personal beliefs about reproductive health.
So what I heard in the discussions in the last few days since this was that it costs $70. Is that right?
It can cost that much. Yes, you can.
Is that just for one pill or one dose?
Yes,
mm-hmm.
That's true. If under the new health care law, if Plan B is prescribed, it can be covered by your insurance.
But that would require a young woman who'd had unprotected sex going to a doctor first, and then
it defeats the over-the-counter rule. Absolutely.
Yeah. So
it is still expensive.
Right. Now, is there a generic version of it?
A Plan B, I believe there is not, but I actually would have to check that. I don't know the answer.
I see. Because I'd seen somewhere, I thought, or heard somewhere, that in the judge's ruling, it also applied to generics. It may have been that he was doing that for future, whenever the patents expired. So what's the sense then? And we started out talking about how our reproductive rights are being rolled back at the state level. How significant do you see this ruling?
I think this ruling is very significant. The background is that this form of birth control is medically safe, and that repeatedly the FDA, in reviewing this application, had said it was fine to be available over the counter with no restriction. And the government even raised this in their case defending their decision. In many cases where there are drugs that are safe, but people would prefer younger people don't use them, they're available over the counter with a label that says not for people under 18. So the way that the government dealt with this is completely different than how they deal with other drugs that are similar. And I do want to note that those other drugs that they've allowed labeling for are actually quite dangerous if taken in large doses, whereas Plan B is not.
Wait a second, though. That at $70 a pop, who the hell's going to overdose on Plan B?
Well, that's true also. But if you take Plan B and you shouldn't, what happens is you get nauseous and your period is delayed. You don't get very sick. Whereas there are forms of cough medicine that can make you quite ill if you take too much of it. And the point is that not based on science or medical analyses, Plan B was treated very differently than other drugs, and it was treated in a way that kept it away from women who might need it.
For about a decade, right?
Yes, for a decade. They've been trying to get this changed for a decade. And so it flew in the face of science. And also, the other piece of background that nobody was talking about, although the judge rightly raised, is women have a constitutional right to birth control. And so this was the Gutis decision was clearly right based on the science and clearly right based on the law.
Well, Sharon Levin, I thank you for joining us here today, and we will see in whether there's an appeal. I think it was a political decision. I think the judge more or less said that, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
This was based on politics, not on science. Well, thank you again.
Thank you so much.
Again, I've been speaking with Sharon Levin, who is the Director of Federal Reproductive Health Policy at the National Women's Law Center. Previously, she was Vice President and General Counsel at the National Abortion Federation, a consultant for NARAL, Pro-Choice America, and Director of Advocacy at the Washington Area Women's Foundation. Sharon Levin was also co-chief counsel to Senator Charles Schumer and Special Assistant for Women's Issues and Legislative Counsel to Congresswoman Nita Lowry. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.